All right, shalom, 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 Israel. This is your boy Ezekiel Ben Israel and Company coming back at you for another wonderful Sabbath lesson. In this lesson, we're going to be diving into Ecclesiasticus or Sirach, chapter 19. We're going to get some words of wisdom. Okay? All right, so if you're ready, let's go.
Ecclesiasticus chapter 19. A laboring man that is given to drunkenness shall not be rich, and he that contemneth small things shall fall by little and little.
Okay, read that one more time for me.
A laboring man that is given to drunkenness.
In other words, a hard-working man. This is a hard-working man, Israel. But he gives himself over to the wine bottle. Or he gives himself over to the Jack Daniels. Too much. Okay, come on.
A laboring man that is given to drunkenness.
And why do I say, well, how do we know that it's too much? Because he's drunk. He's out of his mind drunk. He's so drunk that he's talking to himself. Right? He's feeling sorry for himself. Only the Lord knows what's going on in this man's spirit. Only the Lord knows. Okay?
Come on.
Okay, but he's gotten so drunk, it could be that this man is has unconfessed sin. And he's going to the bottle, because people do that with drugs, right? They're running from demons. These demons are with them no matter where they go, right? But somehow they try to detach themselves from the reality of these demons that's haunting their spirit, right? By getting drunk with wine, getting drunk with strong drink, using drugs such as marijuana, crack cocaine, meth, crystal meth. Right? All of these various things, right? Substances, right? Substance abuse, right? Or the same can go for sex. Men, women, they run from their demons by indulging in sexual activity with various partners, right? Okay, come on.
A laboring man that is given to drunkenness shall not be rich. And he that contemneth small things shall fall by little and little.
Okay, so give me Ecclesiasticus 31 and 26 first. Ecclesiasticus 31 and 26.
Ecclesiasticus 31 and 26.
And you can give me Luke 19 and 17 ready. Come on.
The furnace proveth the edge by dipping. So doth wine the hearts of the proud by drunkenness.
See, so what's happening is that whatever is secretly going on with this man, he exposes it when he's drunk. That's why it's not wise to get drunk, because oftentimes you will say a lot of things that was actually hidden in your heart and were really only meant for the Lord to hear in prayer as you confess them and forsook them. Now you're wondering why or how these things got out on social media. You're wondering how these things got out into the community. Because you, through your drunkenness, stupor, you spilled the beans to someone and you don't even remember who that person is. See that thing? Okay. Read that one more time.
Ecclesiasticus 31 and 26. The furnace proveth the edge by dipping. So doth wine the hearts of the proud by drunkenness.
Just like you want to refine a metal, you put it down into the heat of the furnace, and all the impurities begin to rise up to the surface, or they begin to burn off of that metal, right? And it says the same thing drunkenness will do with the heart of a man. The things that he's hidden in his heart, he's going to tell them. Because he's drunk, right? So that's the reason why when we drink, we have to do it in moderation, Israel, because If we overdrink, then it invites a demon in to possess us. And that demon is going to expose us for who we really are, right?
Gone.
Okay, so then the second part says, and he that contemneth small things shall fall by little and little. So in order for us to understand what this is saying, we have to understand what contemn means, okay? Contemn means to treat or regard with contempt. In other words, you don't want to, you just hate it when this person talks. You hate it when this person comes around. You don't even want to deal with this person, period, right? Okay. And so, and he that contemneth small things. So though people that hate dealing with small things in their lives, things that the Lord says, it's the small things that destroy us, right? That little bit of leaven, it leaveneth your whole lump, right? That thing which, oh, that's nothing, Lord. That's just a little thing or whatever. But it says, and he that contemneth small things, he that hateth dealing with the small things, shall fall little by little. So that person's going to fall. He's not going to notice it. It's going to be so subtle. The fall is going to be so subtle that he's not going to notice it. But by the time he looks up, he's going to be way down on the bottom. He's going to be way down, right? And he's not going to be able to recover. Okay, so give me Luke 19 to 17.
Luke 19 and 17.
Mm-hmm.
And he said unto him, well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in a very little, have thou authority over 10 cities.
You see that? So this person here, this servant here of the Most High, he was faithful in small things. In order for you to be faithful in small things, you had to be faithful in small things of the Lord. You had to be faithful in your own life. You got to be faithful in, you know, dealing with the small sins that bothers the Lord. It may not be nothing so huge that, you know, you just destroying nations with it, but I mean, it's destroying you, right? If you're a man enough, if you're a woman enough to deal with these sins, these small sins, then the Lord, he's going to do this. Read that again.
And he said unto him, well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in a very little, have thou authority over 10 cities.
So when we get the kingdom, because that man was, the Lord could entrust to him small things in this life, in our captivity. Once the captivity was turned, the Lord entrusted to him big things because he dealt with the small things. Okay, so let's move on down to verse 2. Because what king will entrust to you big things if he sees he can't trust you with the little things? If he can't trust you with $10, why would he want to give you $100? That's why oftentimes a lot of loan companies or a lot of credit card companies, they'll start off with a limit of say $400, $300, but you want that $1,000. You want that $2,000, that $3,000. No, they want to see how faithful you're going to be with that $100, $200, $300. If you're faithful at paying your note on that, then perhaps they'll consider in about 6 months to a year to give you a raise in your credit line. Okay, come on.
Ecclesiastes 19, verse 2.
Mm-hmm.
Wine and women will make men of understanding to fall away.
Wine and women will make men that have understanding to fall away. Wine and women. Wine and women. Come on.
And he that cleaveth to harlots will become impudent.
And he that cleaveth to harlots will become impudent. Let's deal with that. Wine and women will make men of understanding to fall away. Give me Proverbs 31 and 6. And somebody give me Proverbs 23 and 20. Proverbs 31 and 6 and Proverbs 23 and 20.
Proverbs 31 and 6. Give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish, and wine unto those that be of heavy hearts.
You see why that's a bad combination, wine and women? Because, you know, you're having a good time with this strange woman. She's not your wife, by the way. You're having a good time with this woman. She may be just a friend, a girl that's a friend of yours, right? But it's still unsafe for you. Because if wine is in the if wine is in the picture, right? What is wine? What is a lot of what is large wine consuming for?
Give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish.
Okay, wine that's high in alcohol content would be considered strong drink, right? That's why Israel, we should get wine that has as lower content as possible. I'll say 3-5%, maybe even 6-7%, but that's about it. Come on.
And wine unto those that be of heavy hearts.
So that's the reason why this is a bad combination, because women like to run their mouths, don't they? You see what I'm saying? That's why I say a lot of men wind up getting set up by a lot of these worldly women, because they consume liquor, strong drink, or wine, strong wine, and then they run their mouths to them women. And that man may be a hard-working man, right? But he may have money stashed away somewhere, and he may say, "Yeah, baby, I got a couple hundred thousand over there." And all she thinking about is that money. She ain't thinking about him. She don't love him. Like I said, it's not his wife. But he, you know, his pride is coming out too. You see, he wants to brag around this woman. You see? And now he's being set up. She gonna set him up and have some other wicked Negroes to come, and he'd be lucky if he gets away with his life. But they'll rob him, take his money, take his car, take a whole bunch of stuff. This stuff is happening every day. And why? Because of this, what we're reading right here. Read that again.
Proverbs 31:6.
Uh-huh. And then give me 23 and 20 ready. Uh-huh.
Give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish.
Give strong drink unto him that's ready to die. He may be ready to die, but who wants to be murdered by an enemy? You see what I'm saying? David even made a prayer about it. Please, Lord, don't let my enemy take my life. Let me just pass away. You see what I'm saying? The David knew that that's a terrible thing for his enemies to take his life. What else you got?
And wine unto those that be of heavy hearts.
And wine unto those that be of heavy hearts. You see? If you have heavy heart and you drunk, you want to be in the presence of your wife. You know what I'm saying? So she can say, "Go in bed, and we'll deal with the rest of it tomorrow. I love you. Good night." Okay, baby. Go to bed. You see what I'm saying? Like your mother's told me many a times, you know, I wasn't drunk, but you know, I'd be running my mouth, complaining or whatever. And she said, go take a nap or something. Go to bed. You know what I'm saying? You want to be in the presence of your wife, that daughter of Zion. You understand? Okay, give me Proverbs 23 and 20.
Proverbs 23 and 20.
And then give me Isaiah 5 and 22. That's why the men of Israel have to study to show themselves approved of God. That's why I'm bringing you words of wisdom, Achims, brethren, kings and priests, young princes. That's why I'm bringing it. That's why we're bringing this to you. So you can prepare yourself for rulership. So you can prepare yourself to have that lovely daughter of Zion for a wife. So you can prepare yourself to have that young princess. So you can prepare yourself to have that young prince. And you be worthy of all that. Because to whom much is given, much is required. Come on.
Proverbs 23 and 20.
Proverbs 23 and 20. Come on.
Be not among wine bibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh.
Uh-huh. So these are people who they pig out. They put the big old feast on the table and they say, "Pour me up, hit me another one, give me another one, give me another one." Come on.
For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty.
The drunkard and the glutton. Now they come with a whole lot of money and they leave with about $5 or $10 in their pocket. Because they feel like, hey, you know, I worked hard this week. I'm going to eat and eat and eat, and I'm going to drink, and I'm going to have me a woman, and that's going to be it. Not your wife, not a wife, but I'm going to have me a strange woman. You see? And now all their money gone, and everybody that was consuming it with them, they gone too. And they wondering what happened. Right? Come on, read that again.
Be not among wine bibbers,
mm-hmm.
among riotous eaters of flesh.
The Lord is warning us, don't follow them. Don't be amongst them. Them to say, "Come on, we finna have a party. We're gonna bring a, we're going to order up about 20 pizzas. We're going to have this. We're going to have that. Lord said, don't follow them. That's what that's talking about, right? It can be 20 pizzas or it could be 30 burritos. It don't matter. It's, that's what you call a feast, right? You got a whole lot of food coming in the dough, right? Okay, read that one more time, and then we're going to move on to Isaiah 5 and 22.
Be not among wine bibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh.
These are people who are notorious for hitting a bottle. They are notorious. Whenever you see them, you know some liquor going to be in the picture. All right, come on.
Con. Isaiah 5 and 22.
And then give me Ecclesiasticus 42, 12 through 14 ready. Come on.
Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine, and men of strength to mingle strong drink.
The Bible says, destruction unto those that mingle with strong wine. Read that again.
Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine.
Israel, woe here means destruction. Whenever you see woe, it means destruction, right? Read that again.
Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine.
Uh-huh.
And men of strength to mingle strong drink.
This is men of strength, man. These are mighty men. But that wine will destroy you. I don't care how mighty, how wise you think you are, how strong you think you are in battle, how bad you think you are with your pistol. Read that one more time.
Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine,
mm-hmm.
and men of strength to mingle strong drink.
And men of strength, these are bad men. These are some serious cats. But that wine, boy, will break it on down. Gonna break you down, right? Give me Ecclesiasticus 42, 12 through 14.
Ecclesiasticus 42, 12 through 14.
Uh-huh.
Behold not everybody's beauty, and sit not in the midst of women.
This is talking about a beautiful woman. The Lord says, don't be so quick to behold a beautiful woman just because she's beautiful, right? Come on.
For from garments cometh a moth,
uh-huh.
and from women wickedness.
See that thing? From women wickedness, right? That's talking about that because you know you got that wine in the midst of that too. Wherever you got women, you're going to have some eating. They're going to make sure you eating. And they're going to make sure that they offer you something to drink. This is all part of the game. Because remember, this is not wife. This is not wife. Okay? This is all part of the game. The Lord is warning his men, right?
Gone.
And his men to be, because there's a lot of men out there that have not come to the knowledge of this truth. But they're going to hear this broadcast and they're going to say, you know what? I like this. I want some more of this. Okay, read that. Okay, you done?
Better is the churlishness of a man than a courteous woman. A woman, I say, which bringeth shame and reproach.
Mm-hmm. A woman that bringeth shame and reproach. and you know what? This is the type of woman that she is courteous. She courteous to you. She says nice things. She doesn't call you out your name. She's not loud, but she destroys you. This is some deep stuff, man. Read that again. She destroys. She still destroys. She's courteous about destroying you. That's crazy. Come on. But I'm just telling you, these are the type of weapons that the Most High has out there waiting on rebellious Negroes. Come on.
Better is the churlishness of a man than a courteous woman.
See, she's a courteous. She's nice. She said, oh, excuse me. You know, if she passes gas, she said, excuse me, I'm sorry. Come on.
A woman, I say, which bringeth shame and reproach.
See, but she turns around and she'll do something that make you cringe. She's nice, she's polite, but she'll disrespect you when another man comes in the room. She'll be flirting with that man, but she'll say, excuse me, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Did I step on your foot? I'm just saying, this is what this is talking about. She has courteous ways about her, but the hoe in her, she can't help that. She's a courteous hoe. I've experienced these type of women. She's very courteous, but when another man comes in there wearing some gaiters, or wearing a nice three-piece suit in this pimp mode, she'd disrespect you in a heartbeat. This is what this is talking about. Read that one more time. Or he got a lot of money. Come on.
Better is the churlishness of a man than a courteous woman. A woman, I say, which bringeth shame and reproach.
See, she gonna bring shame and reproach on you. You were fooled by her. Excuse me, I'm sorry, did I hit you? But then her hoe comes out when that other man or them other men come in the picture. This is crazy stuff. I mean, I've experienced this a lot of times, right? Okay, so give me, let me see. Okay, go back and read Ecclesiastes 19 and 2, the last part. The last part.
Ecclesiastes 19 and 2.
The last part of it. Come on.
And he that cleaveth to harlots will become impudent.
See? She's a harlot. That's what you're talking about, right? She's a harlot, right? She has the mind of a harlot, right? So this is, now check this out. Watch this. What is impudent? What is an impudent person? Read that again, the last part.
And he that cleaveth to harlots will become impudent.
The man that cleaveth to harlots, he will become impudent. Watch this. What is impudent? Let's find out what impudent means. Impudent, an impudent person is one marked by contemptuous or cocky boldness or disregard of others. Insolent, obsolete, lacking modesty. You see that thing? See that, you know where he got that? You know where that spirit came? You know how that spirit got on him? Them horse women. You become the company that you keep. It may not even be you to be like that. But if you put yourself in the midst of people like that, you're going to become that. That's what that means. Read that last part again.
And he that cleaveth to harlots.
And he that cleaveth to women who are loose, loud mouth, have no husband ruling over them,
will become impudent.
He will become impudent. And what is an impudent person? One that is marked by contemptuous or cocky boldness or disregard of others. Insolent, obsolete, lacking modesty. Tell you, this Bible was something else. Okay, let's move on. Give me Ecclesiasticus. Okay, who's reading? Oh, you reading, Zeph?
Yes.
Give me Ecclesiasticus 19 and 3. Move down to that.
Verse 3.
Uh-huh.
Moths and worms shall have him to heritage.
Give me Job 24 and 20 ready. Read that again.
Moths and worms shall have him to heritage.
This talking about that man, that same man that's entertaining them harlots. Moths and worms, which means his life is going to be eaten up little by little. Moths, and what do moths do to clothes? They eat them up. What do worms do to earth? They eat through it. I hope we're learning some wisdom here today, Israel. Read that again.
Moths and worms shall have him to heritage.
That's what all he got coming. That's all he had. That's his future right there. To be eaten up little by little. That's it. To be taken from little by little. Never being able to express his true self. Come on.
And a bold man shall be taken away.
Wasn't he bold? That's what impudent is, right? Cockiness is boldness, right? See? I'm telling you, boy, this thing is deep, boy. Okay, give me Job 24 and 20.
Job 24 and 20.
Uh-huh.
The womb shall forget him. The worm shall feed sweetly on him.
See, this is talking about the hope for salvation. You see how one thing is leading to another? You got those loose women. You got that horde, the whorish women. Then you have the eating. Just indulging. Then you have the wine, the strong drink. Then you have the spirits coming off of them women on that man. That's why you see a lot of our men, they so out of control and like a woman. That's why you see, because that's all they were raised by. You see? And a lot of the spirits that was on them women is on them men now. And now they're acting like women instead of men.
Gone.
Give me Job 24 and 20. Read that again. And then move on down to 4 for me.
The womb shall forget him.
The womb is going to forget him.
The worm shall feed sweetly on him.
That's talking about death.
He shall be no more remembered.
He shall no more be remembered. Why? Because you did not allow the Lord to give you your own heritage, your own personality, allow your own personality to be known. You took on the personality of strange, wicked, harlot women. You see, you didn't allow the Lord to give you your manly heritage. So no one knew you. You were no different from these wicked women out here or these wicked men. Your individuality was hidden by their spirits on you. This is what this is talking about, right? Okay, so give me, come on down to 4 for me.
Verse 4.
Uh-huh.
He that is hasty to give credit is light-minded, and he that sinneth shall offend against his own soul.
Give me Ecclesiasticus 6 and 7. Read that one more time for me.
He that is hasty to give credit is light-minded.
Okay, why would someone be real quick to give credit to someone they just met? Because it could be that they're in rebellion against God and they're anxious to make friends, to get a bunch of friends with them so that they don't feel lonely. See how that works? Now check this out. Because why? They're vulnerable to just being by themselves. They feel vulnerable. They're feeling guilty. So they got to get people around them real quick. I've been there. You got to get people around you real quick and so that you can forget the guilt. So they can bring something to you, a conversation, or y'all can go somewhere and do some stuff together. You don't even care if they're sinners. You just want company. Right? Read that again.
He that is hasty to give credit is light-minded.
But you're light-minded, you're simple, the Lord is saying. You're stupid. You're giving somebody credit who you don't know. You don't know nothing about this person. Come on.
And he that sinneth shall offend against his own soul.
See? So what they're saying is, you're giving that man, that wicked man, credit. And you know what? The Bible says if you bid a wicked man Godspeed, guess what? The Lord said the same curse that he gonna put on him, he's gonna put on you too. Because you bid that man Godspeed. You're basically blessing that man, because why? You are in a position where you're vulnerable and you just want a company. But in the process, you don't realize that you were bringing another curse upon you because of your vulnerability. But you wouldn't have been vulnerable, man of God, if you had to just turn from your wicked ways, and you would have came to the Lord and you would have confessed and he would have healed you, and you would have nothing that the devil could blackmail you or make you feel guilty about. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you, once the Lord put that wheel in motion, boy, it's either you're going to roll with it or you're going to get crushed. Ain't no in between. I'm telling you, that's why I try to make it my teaching as simple as possible, Israel. Watch this. What you got?
Ecclesiasticus 6 and 7.
Read that.
If thou wouldest get a friend, prove him first, and be not hasty to credit him.
See that thing? See that? If you would get a friend, prove that he is truly a friend first. Don't be quick to credit him. But you are going to get yourself in a trap. The Lord will have you in a trick bag if your heart is not right when you start looking for the friend. It's the same thing when we're talking about, the communion. It says, let a man examine himself first before you eat of the Lord's body and drink of his blood. See, I'm telling you, man, this thing is serious, brother. This thing is serious, Israel. Read that one more time.
Ecclesiasticus 6 and 7.
Come on.
If thou wouldest get a friend, prove him first.
We're going back to 5 after this. Come on.
And be not hasty to credit him.
Don't be hasty to credit him, because you don't know nothing about this cat. Okay, come on.
Verse 5.
Uh-huh.
Whoso taketh pleasure in wickedness shall be condemned,
Whoso taketh pleasure in wickedness shall be condemned. Come on. Give me Acts 15:29 ready. Come on.
But he that resisteth pleasures crowneth his life.
Because why? Because it shows discipline. It's just like fasting, right? You've been eating cakes, ice cream, eating out every Sabbath, but you say, you know what? The Lord has been so good to me on this, as far as my belly concerned. You know what? Today, no thank you. I'm going to fast. Or even if you ain't fasting, you just reject it. You could take it, but you know what? You say, you know what? I'm going to sacrifice this to the Lord today. I'm just going to eat soup.
I'm just
going to eat rice and beans. Y'all can have that. Y'all enjoy that. I've done that from time to time, you know, say, hey, you know what? Y'all go ahead. I'm just going to eat me a hot dog or two, you know, not eat the dainties. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes, even if you're not all out flat fasting, Israel, sometimes reject the best. It's just like when you come into a place, you're invited to come and dine with the king. You say you can get the high seat. But you know, you say, you know what? I'm good here. I'll sit down. I'll have to get the best seat. It's all about humility. It's all about keeping yourself in a humble place.
Kind.
That's what it's all about. All right. Okay. Let's go back. Let's get back to the main text. Read that again. What did you read?
Verse 5.
Mm-hmm.
Whoso taketh pleasure in wickedness shall be condemned.
Mm-hmm.
But he that resisteth pleasures crowneth his life.
You see that thing? Give me Acts 15:29, and then you give me 1 Peter 2:11.
Acts 15:29.
Uh-huh.
That ye abstain from meats offered to idols,
uh-huh,
and from blood,
yes,
and from things strangled, and from fornication, from which if ye keep yourselves, ye shall do well.
See? Give me 1 Peter 2:11. Why do we struggle in a lot of ways, a lot of times? Why do sin catch us off guard and make us look bad? Because we have not resisted some pleasures. We have not resisted the fine, dainty foods. We had to do these things on our own because it shows the Lord a level of maturity in our walk with Him. Sometimes we got to take the low place instead of the high place. Sometimes we had to take just regular food instead of the dainties. Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they ate pulse when they could have been at the king's table enjoying all that food, you know, but they humbled themselves, you see, and that's what we as men of God, we have to learn to do that. And we have to learn to do that not when someone else says, okay, let's all do this, but we had to do it ourselves. For our own soul salvation. Because that person may not always be around you leading the way, telling you need to do this. You have to learn to do that yourself. On your own. Without anyone saying anything. So this must be a mindset that you have to develop. It's called humility. Read that again.
Acts 15:29.
Uh-huh. And then you give me 1 Peter 2:11. Read that.
That ye abstain from meats offered to idols,
mm-hmm,
and from blood,
mm-hmm,
and from things strangled, and from fornication, from which if ye keep yourselves, ye shall do well.
That's right.
Fare ye well.
Okay. All right. Give me 1 Peter 2:11. And then you give me Ecclesiasticus 28:8.
1 Peter 2:11.
Uh-huh.
Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul.
Mm-hmm. Come on.
Ecclesiasticus 28:8.
Uh-huh.
Abstain from strife, and thou shalt diminish thy sins.
See, that when you're consuming a lot of meats, when you're consuming a lot of wine or strong drink, then what happens is, I've seen it a lot of time with like winos and stuff, they'll sit around, it'll start out okay. They'll be drinking, they might have some chicken out there in a bag and everybody eating the chicken because they got the munchies from drinking. And then all of a sudden, when the guts get full and the wine is in them, that then it's an argument and a fight. Read that again.
Ecclesiasticus 28 and 8.
Uh-huh.
Abstain from strife, and thou shalt diminish thy sins.
See? Abstain from strife, and thou shalt diminish thy sins. But strife starts somewhere. It builds. Everything builds. The Satan is strategic. We got to understand that the devil is strategic. He'll start off with this one little thing, and then that one little thing will lead to that one little thing, and that one little thing will lead to that one little thing. And before you notice, you're surrounded by little things. And all them little things are working against you to bring you down. That's why we had to be wise enough to say, hey, what's going on here? Let me get out of here. I see all these little things starting to gather together against me. You see? I'm telling you, man. All right, read that again.
Abstain from strife, and thou shalt diminish thy sins.
But you got to have a spiritual eye. You got to be then trained your spiritual eye to see what the devil is trying to do to you. If you just walking through life and you ain't noticing life, if you think it's okay out there because the birds are chirping and the sun is out and you don't know nothing else, right? You're going to be taken down. Read that again.
Abstain from strife, and thou shalt diminish thy sins.
There you go.
For a furious man will kindle strife.
A furious man will kindle strife. Give me Ecclesiasticus 19 to 6.
Ecclesiasticus 19 and 6.
Uh-huh.
He that can rule his tongue shall live without strife.
Mm-hmm.
And he that hateth babbling shall have less evil.
So this man that can rule his tongue, is this a man that just drinks wine and strong drink?
No.
Because we know that his tongue is, he's going to lose control of his tongue if he continues to drink a lot of wine and a lot of strong drink, right? So then what does that come to? Leave wine and strong drink alone. If you think you can't control yourself, don't drink at all.
Gone.
Give me, but this goes back to wisdom. So what is, and then it says, and he that hateth babbling shall have less evil. Let's see what babbling means. Babbling is a stage in child development and a stage in language acquisition during which an infant appears to be experimenting with uttering articulate sounds, but does not yet produce any recognizable words. So this is what a drunkard gonna be doing. That's what a junker does, right? So give me Ecclesiasticus 7 and 14. They make fools out of themselves in the public. I remember one time me and my homeboy, he wasn't a friend, but he was just a homeboy. We used to sit on the couch and just drink 40s. I'd kill him. I'd beat him in 29.9 seconds. I'd drink a 40-ounce about that tall of beer. Yeah, your dad was something else. 29.9 seconds, I'd kill it, right? And then we'd sit up there and we'd just talk crazy, okay? Give me Ecclesiasticus 7 and 14, then give me Ecclesiasticus 20 and 5.
Ecclesiasticus 7 and 14.
Mm-hmm.
Use not many words in a multitude of elders.
But I learned from them. I learned from those days. First of all, I give the Lord all glory, all praise, and all honor for bringing me from that time in my life. I could have died right there on that couch. Could have been cats come up there with their pistols and shot us up, robbed us, whatever. We didn't have nothing. You know what I'm saying? But I'm saying they could have just shot us, you know, killed us. We could have been gone, you know. Who's to say the Lord, you know, Lord didn't have to bring me this far? Who's to say the Lord had to bring me this far? No man has promised tomorrow. You see? Come on.
Ecclesiasticus 7 and 14.
Ecclesiasticus 7 and 14. Come on.
Use not many words in a multitude of elders.
And then give me Ecclesiasticus 20 and 5. Uh-huh.
And make not much babbling when thou prayest.
Uh-huh. So that's what babbling means, right? You down on your knees like, if you tired, go to bed. Just say the Our Father prayer and go to bed. Don't try to do no long prayer and you know you tired as crap, right? It's better to say 10 words with understanding than to be babbling. Read that again.
Use not many words in a multitude of elders.
Mm-hmm.
And make not much babbling when thou prayest.
Okay. Give me Ecclesiasticus 20 and 5.
Ecclesiasticus 20 and 5.
Come on.
There is one that keepeth silence and is found wise, and another by much babbling becometh hateful.
Okay. See that thing? Give me, sometimes it's good to be silent. Be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Right? Give me, let's get back to the main text. Get back to that main text.
Ecclesiasticus 19, verse 7.
Mm-hmm. Okay, come on.
Rehearse not unto another that which is told unto thee, and thou shalt fare never the worse.
Okay, read that again.
Rehearse not unto another.
Don't be so quick to run and tell what someone told you. That's what this is talking about right here. Don't be someone run, because if a person tells you something, right, even in your family, and you run and you tell what that person told you, even if it's concerning another person, it doesn't matter. The Lord is saying, don't do that. Why? Because you don't know what's in the heart of the person that told you. You might decipher what's in that person's heart the wrong way. You might decipher it to mean bad when they mean good. And now you have transferred it from bad, from good to bad through you.
Done.
When you thinking that you're helping, you're hurting it. That's the reason why the Lord said, read that again.
Rehearse not unto another that which is told unto thee.
And not only that, it shows a level of confidence that people can have in you. A level of confidence where a person, if they can't trust you, they won't trust you with nothing. And you wonder why you don't get a lot of opportunities to do certain things with that person, because they see they can't trust you with a word. Let alone their car keys. Let alone this, let alone that. They can't even trust you to shut your mouth. So why would they want to trust you with their car? Why would they want to trust you with their camera? Why would they want to trust you with their iPhone or whatever they got? I'm just saying, you know, we have to understand that the same way that you have to do unto others as you would have them to do to you. If they told you, now, such and such and such, I'm going to tell you, I want to share something with you, but I don't want you going and repeating this to anyone. And you say, okay, I won't do that. They're trusting your word. It don't make no difference if it's your family. Don't matter. It don't matter. You made a vow before God and that person, you wouldn't say nothing. And the Lord saw that you broke that vow. Reread that again.
Rehearse not unto another that which is told unto thee.
Especially if they say, now don't, they make sure they tell you, now don't repeat this to anyone. You ever did that before? You ever repeated was to someone something that was told to you this, and the person told you, don't say it?
No.
Seriously?
Yes.
What about you?
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Really?
No.
Never?
No.
Wow. This is amazing. Okay. All right. Well, hey, yes, that's good. That's good. Come on.
Rehearse not unto another that which is told unto thee.
And thou shalt fear never the worse. Thou shalt fear never the worse. Right? Give me Proverbs 17 and 9. I hope what y'all saying is true. I really do. And Israel, I hope you have not done that as well, because what's going to happen is it's going to be done unto you.
Gone.
Gone.
Give me Ecclesiastes 19 and 8.
Ecclesiastes 19, verse 8.
Uh-huh.
Whether it be to friend or foe, talk not of other men's lives.
Whether it be to friend or to foe, talk not of other men's lives. Okay, in other words, don't gossip. Don't gossip. Women gossip. Men, don't gossip. Come on.
And if thou canst without offense, reveal them not.
Reveal them not without offense. Right? Keep going.
For he heard and observed thee.
The Lord allowed you, the Lord allowed that person to catch you talking about them. That's what that's talking about. Come on.
And when time cometh, he will hate thee.
And when time cometh, he will hate thee. Come off of it just a little bit. Just a little bit, because a little bit strong. Okay, read that one more time.
For he heard and observed thee.
Uh-huh.
And when time cometh, he will hate thee.
He will hate thee. Okay, now you just made an enemy right there. Keep going.
If thou hast heard a word, let it die with thee.
If you heard a word, let it die with you. In other words, you heard a word, right? It wasn't a conversation you were having with the person you heard. It was just, you heard a word. In other words, it's saying, meddle not in other men's matters. Remember what it said, how I said in the Bible? That's the saying, the same thing. You overheard what other men were talking about. Come on.
If thou hast heard a word, let it die with
you. Let it die with you. Don't ever bring this up to anyone. Like I said, you don't know how they're feeling about how they're conversing to one another. That's what a lot of times I think the best example I can use is I've heard of times where husbands and wives were arguing and physically fighting. And then a man, a stranger, would come and try to think that he was helping the woman, right? When really the woman was just trying to make her husband jealous. She was in love with her husband, and she just wanted attention from her husband. But here come this man thinking that she's really wanting outside help when she really doesn't, right? And her husband knows that. But here come this man trying to be a hero, and they both wound up beating the crap out of him. That's a prime example right there. Because you don't know what's going on between them. A lot of times, sons and daughters don't know what's going on between the husband and wife. All they know is what they hear, and they're always going to decipher it in the worst way. But that's not your husband, and that's not your wife. That's your mother and your father. Husband and wife is different from mother and father. You see? So you don't know what the crap is going on. So that's why you got to stay completely out of it. Because that's my wife and I'm her husband. You understand what I'm saying? So you getting into it, you getting yourself in a lot of trouble with both the husband and that wife, or your mother and that father. You getting yourself in trouble, right? And you losing privileges too, and you don't realize it. Anyway, go ahead and read that.
Kind.
If thou hast heard a word, let it die with thee.
That's why you just let it die. You say, hey, that's none of my business. You know, that's between mom and dad. Let me just leave that alone. That's between them. They husband and wife. I'm just the son. Go ahead.
And be bold.
And be bold. Come on.
It will not burst thee.
See, it's not going to burst you open. Just because you let that thing die, leave it alone. Don't mess with it. Don't have nothing to do with it. It's not going to bother you. Because it ain't your business. The Lord ain't going to let it bother you because it ain't none of your business. That's why he says, meddle not in other men's matters. Okay? Keep going.
A fool travaileth with a word.
This is the one that they just got to get involved some kind of way. They got to say something. They got to make a comment. They got to do something to the mom or to the dad. This is what I'm talking about, a fool. Come on. He struggles with not getting involved. Like, oh, like a woman that's having a baby. She's like, oh. He got to do something with that word. He got to get involved because he overheard something, right? He got to get involved some kind of way. This is what the Lord is saying. A fool, he travaileth with what he heard, and now he has to say something. He got to have some type of involvement in this, some kind of way. You got to make a comment, something. Come on.
A fool travaileth with a word as a woman in labor of a child.
She having birth pains, so he having birth pains with that word. Come on.
As an arrow that sticketh in a man's thigh.
Uh-huh.
So is a word within a fool's belly.
He got to say something. If some word that he overheard, he got to make a comment. He got to spread this around. Guess what I heard? Man, guess what I heard? He got to do that, right? This is what a fool will do, right? Okay, come on. So if you don't want to be labeled a fool, Israel, don't do that. Let it die. Let it die. Give me verse 13.
Admonish a friend. It may be he hath not done it.
Mm-hmm.
And if he have done it, that he do it no more.
Let's see what admonish means, Israel. Because in order to understand this, we have to understand what admonish means. Okay? So what does it mean to admonish someone? It means to indicate duties or obligations to express warning or disapproval to, especially in a gentle, earnest, or solicitous manner. Where admonished for being late. To give friendly, earnest advice or encouragement to admonish them to be careful. So basically, you're warning them. That's what you're doing. It says to indicate duties or obligations to express warning or disapproval to, especially in a gentle, earnest, or solicitous manner, where admonished for being late. Okay, so read verse 13 again.
Admonish a friend.
So warn a friend. Because they say that they're your friend, right? So you warn them, right? Come on.
It may be he hath not done it.
It may be he hath not done it. So just warn him. Now, I'm warning you. I don't know if you've done this or not, but I'm warning you in advance. If you do this, we are no longer friends. Come on.
And if he hath done it, that he do it no more.
Okay, it's because of that warning. Because of that warning. You know how the Bible says warning always cometh before destruction? Well, warning is going to come before the destruction of your friendship too. Right? Because it's that friend, that other friend's obligation to warn you about what you might be saying about that friend.
Con.
Okay, keep reading.
Admonish thy friend. It may be he hath not said it.
Mm-hmm.
And if he have, that he speak it not again.
So you're not going to just destroy the friendship right out. You're going to give them a warning. You're going to give them an opportunity to make it up to you that they'll never do this again. You're not just going to just destroy the friendship the first time, right? Keep reading.
Admonish a friend, for many times it is a slander.
Many times someone's lying on that friend because they may be jealous of the friendship you have. That's happened with a lot of brothers and sisters. You have someone on the outside that's jealous and envious that the brothers are close or the sisters are close or the brother and sister or the vice versa are close, and they'll lie and try to divide you up. You see? But that's because you are already petty. That other brother's already petty, right? Or insecure or something. And they seen that. The devil and them seen that. And the devil said, got something. Give me, keep reading down.
Verse 16.
Okay, go ahead.
There is one that slippeth in his speech.
Give me James 1:19 ready. Uh-huh.
But not from his heart.
There is one that slippeth in his speech. Sometimes people can be having a good time, joking or whatever, and they'll say something kind of off. It'll be from folly, right? And folly's okay sometimes. Sometimes we have fun, we joke, we say crazy things. But we don't mean anything bad by it, right? So this is what this is talking about. Friends or brothers and sisters or brothers and sisters and sisters, they can be joking around and then call each other a name or something. Like long head, bean, eyeball, poking head, And it may, they may not even mean nothing by it, you know? And you might take it the wrong way. So this is why the Bible says this. Read that again.
There is one that slippeth in his speech.
They slipped and said something they didn't mean. Come on.
But not from his heart.
But not from their heart. It wasn't something precalculated they've been meditating on in their mind. Come on.
And who is he that hath not offended with his tongue?
The Lord is saying, hey, you did it or you're going to do it. So don't be so hard on him. That's what the Lord is saying.
Gone.
Give me James 1 and 19.
James 1 and 19.
Come on.
Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath.
This is one way you can be helped not to make the mistake, right? Of overjudging them or judging them too harshly by what they did or said, right? Okay, let's move on down to 17. By practicing James 1 and 19. Come on.
Verse 17.
Uh-huh.
Admonish thy neighbor before thou threaten him.
Uh-huh. That means warn him. Warn him first. Watch that. Warn him first. Come on.
And not being angry.
If you just leave it there on that thing, you won't have that problem. That's why I got that. Come on.
Give place to the law of the Most High.
Give place to the law of the Most High. Come on.
Verse 18.
Verse 18.
The fear of the Lord is the first step to be accepted of him.
The fear of the Lord is the first step to being accepted of him. Come on.
And wisdom obtaineth his love.
And wisdom obtaineth his love. Wisdom obtain. When we do things wisely, knowing how we are. Like if you know you're going to hit things, you know you're notorious for hitting, bumping and all this stuff. Leave things where they are. Don't be one to do all this movement because you know you're notorious for bumping. That's wisdom. Read, this is how you know when you got, you know, some wisdom. You know what I'm saying? You're used to doing things in a certain way. Okay, go ahead. Read that one more time.
Verse 18.
Uh-huh.
The fear of the Lord is the first step to be accepted.
Then what happens is when you do stuff like that and you cause that spirit, then it causes the spirit to mess with other people. And they get to doing bumping and making noise because the spirit is here. You see what I'm saying? But if you do your job to hinder your spirits, I do my job to hinder my spirits, he do his job to hinder his spirits, then the spirits can't trouble nobody. You see what I'm saying? You starved here, then if you don't check it, then it gets over here. It start affecting me. Then it gets over there. It start affecting him. That's how spirits are able to take over something. Come on.
Ecclesiasticus 19 and 18.
And I love it like that because you know what? The Lord gives us all responsibilities. No matter who we are, he always makes sure you got a responsibility to keeping the spirit flowing. Come on.
The fear of the Lord is the first step to be accepted of him.
The fear of the Lord is the first step to being accepted of him. Come on.
And wisdom obtaineth his love.
Wisdom will keep his love around you. He will keep you surrounded. It will keep his love surrounding you. Give me Psalm 111 and 10. Psalm 111 and 10.
Psalm 111 and 10.
Remember I told you, back off that a little bit. Uh-huh.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
A good understanding have all they that do his commandments.
Now, you know, something else you can do if you want to lean up closer, just push the mic back some. Push the mic back some. Just push it straight back. There you go. Now you can come up a little bit if you want. Okay. So read that one more time.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
A good understanding have all they that do his commandments.
A good understanding have all they that do his commandments. His commandments. Gone?
Gone.
All right. So let's go back. Excuse me. Let's go back to the main text, 19 and 19.
Ecclesiasticus 19 and 19.
And then give me 2 Timothy 1 and 10, please. Come on.
The knowledge of the commandments of the Lord is the doctrine of life.
The knowledge of the commandments of the Lord is the doctrine of life. So if we want life, we're gonna get in that doctrine. The commandments, the law, statutes, and commandments. Come on.
And they that do things that please him shall receive the fruit of the tree of immortality.
That's what we want. That's what we want. We got to go through what we got to go through. All our trials and tribulations, from the family to the friends to enemies. We got to go through all the trials and tribulations, and we're going to get that tree of immortality.
Done.
Give me 2 Timothy 1 and 10.
2 Timothy 1 and 10.
Come on.
But is now made manifest by the appearing of our Savior Christ, who hath abolished death and hath brought life and immortality to light through the gospel.
There you go. That's the gospel. That's the gospel. Okay? Ecclesiastes 19 and 20.
Ecclesiasticus 19 and 20.
Uh-huh.
The fear of the Lord is all wisdom, and in all wisdom is the performance of the law, and the knowledge of his omnipotency.
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 There you go. Now, what is the best definition of omnipotent? One who has unlimited power or authority. One who is omnipotent. Capitalized, God sense. So one who has unlimited power or authority. That's what omnipotent means. So read that again.
The fear of the Lord is all wisdom, and in all wisdom is the performance of the law, and the knowledge of his omnipotency.
That's right. Come on down.
Verse 21.
Mm-hmm.
If a servant say to his master, I will not do as it pleaseth thee.
I will not do as you say. Now, you can say this in your mind, or you can say this outwardly. But most people would not say this outwardly because they wouldn't have a job. They say it in their minds. Go ahead, read that again.
If a servant say to his master, I will not do as it pleaseth thee.
Come on back up off that mic a little bit.
Though afterward he do it, he angereth him that nourisheth him.
So he angereth him that nourisheth him. You see what I'm saying? So what does it say that master is doing for that servant, that wicked servant that said, I'm not going to do what my master say? It says that, read that last sentence there.
He angereth him that nourisheth him.
He angereth him that nourisheth him. Do you see this? I mean, this is amazing, ain't it? Here it is, this wicked Negro that decides he's not going to do what his master tell him to do. He don't realize that his nourishment is coming from his master. You see how the Lord, he got everything wound up and tied up together for these wicked Negroes? You're being nourished. That's why there's going to be destruction coming to wicked Negroes who don't want to obey those that are over them. Because that person is nourishing you. He's the one that's causing you to live. He's the one that's causing you to stay out of the destruction of the devil's way. But you don't realize that because you're too busy being a wicked nigga. You see what I'm saying? This is why the Bible is so important to us. Because it slaps us out of our stupor, out of our ignorant state, where we think we know what we're doing, but we're really being stupid. It slaps us out of our ignorant state. Here it is, this master. It may be his teacher. It may be his father. He's nourishing him. He's the one that's causing you to stand strong. And you are trying to disobey and rebel against him. You know, one thing I really love about John, the Akiam that I'm training right now with physical fitness is, did he give me any problems?
No.
Did he have any complaints?
No.
And that's a stranger. That's a stranger. And I'm being paid for my services. So you'd think that if anybody was going to complain, it would be someone that's paying for services. But he trusts what I'm telling you. And he's seeing results. he's getting blessed because I'm doing what I'm doing with excellence. I'm doing it to the best of my ability. And I'm being that example. I'm out there doing it too. You see? But a wicked nigger, he won't notice none of that. What he'll do is he'll wait to see one little thing he don't like, and he'll erase all of that leadership example. This is what you face with. This is your challenge, right? This is your challenge. And the Lord, the angels there watching all of that. And when you do stuff like that, you're being unrighteous. It's just like what we were talking about earlier. It says, admonish a friend. It may be he hath not done it, and if he have done it, that he do it no more. Verse 14, admonish thy friend. It may be that he hath not said it, and if he have, that he speak it not again. Admonish a friend, for many times it is a slander. Somebody lied, and believe not every tale. Don't believe every story somebody tell you about someone. Right? There is one that slippeth in his speech, but not from his heart. And who is he that hath not offended with his tongue? That means you gonna slip with your tongue too. So why are you being so hard?
I'm just
saying, you know, that means we wicked, man. When we judge folks like that, we wicked, man, because we gonna do the same thing. And we there judging them harshly. And that's why God gonna make you look real bad before people. Where you at right now?
Verse 22,
read that.
The knowledge of wickedness is not wisdom.
The knowledge, see that? That my people are wise to do evil, but to do good, they know not. They know not to do good, but wickedness, they slick. Ooh, go ahead.
Neither at any time the counsel of sinners prudence.
Give me, that means wicked people telling you something. It's not prudence. It's not considered prudence. Give me 1 Corinthians 1 and 20. But once again, I like the way the Lord operates, because wicked Negroes are going to get what they deserve. Give me 1 Corinthians 1 and 20, and then give me 1 Corinthians 3 and 19.
1 Corinthians 1 and 20.
Come on.
Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world?
Uh-huh.
Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world?
See, that's why they're going to get what they deserve, because they're listening to, we go back again, read verse 22 again.
Ecclesiasticus 19 and 22. The knowledge of wickedness is not wisdom.
See, the knowledge of wickedness ain't wisdom.
Neither at any time the counsel of sinners prudence.
Neither at any time the counsel of another wicked person prudence. Let's get 1 Corinthians 1 and 20. Read that again. Then we go into 3 and 19.
1 Corinthians 1 and 20.
Uh-huh.
Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world?
Have not God made fools out of those that call themselves wise in the world? That's what he's saying. Give me 1 Corinthians 3 and 19.
1 Corinthians 3 and 19.
Come on.
For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God.
The wisdom of this present world, Esau's world, is foolishness with God. Come on.
For it is written, he taketh the wise in their own craftiness.
He's setting them up. That's what that means. That's real. He's setting them up. Give me, that's why the Bible says, if the blind lead the blind, they both gonna fall in the ditch. That's what that mean.
God.
That's what that mean. Give me verse 23. So don't be like that, and you won't be in that ditch, Israel. Come on.
Ecclesiasticus 19 and 23.
19 and 23.
There is a wickedness, and the same an abomination.
There is a wickedness, and the same an abomination. Come on.
And there is a fool wanting in wisdom.
And there is a fool that desires wisdom but can't get it because he's a fool. Give me Leviticus 11 and 12, and then give me a Leviticus 11 and 41. He can't obtain it because he's a fool.
Leviticus 11 and 12.
Uh-huh.
Whatsoever hath no fins nor scales in the waters, that shall be an abomination unto you.
Uh-huh. Well, so that's an abomination. That's an example right there. Then give me 11 and 41. Then give me 18 and 22.
Leviticus 11 and 41. And every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth shall be an abomination.
So anyone eating these types of things, that shows that they have no godly wisdom. So when they get health problems or the Lord sends a sickness on them, they wondering why? Because they didn't exercise no godly wisdom as far as eating was concerned. Come on.
It shall not be eaten.
Doesn't the Bible say the wisdom of God is the wisdom of God is the fear of God? Come on.
That's it.
Okay. Give me a Leviticus 18 and 22.
Leviticus 18 and 22.
And then give me Deuteronomy 7, 25 through 26. Come on.
Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind.
Thou shalt not be a gay. Come on.
It is abomination.
Uh-huh. So you shall not be gay, nor shall you be a lesbian. You understand? That shows that as concerning sexual relations, you have godly wisdom. So when you get AIDS or any other type of disease that the Lord brings upon you that's going to put you to death, don't wonder why. Come on.
Deuteronomy 7, 25 through 26.
Uh-huh.
The graven images of their gods shall ye burn with fire.
Uh-huh. I had an old cross on here with a pastor on it. I had to put it in the trash. I didn't know it was sitting up on the fireplace, and I didn't even see a cross. You know that cross that had pastor on there? I threw that thing in the trash. You know what I'm saying? Come on.
Thou shalt not desire the silver or gold that is on them.
That's a graven image. It don't even have no silver on it, but it represents what put our Savior to death. So I'm put that sucker in the trash. Come on.
Nor take it unto thee.
Nor take it unto thee.
Lest thou be snared therein.
Lest you be snared therein. All right.
For it is an abomination to the Lord thy God.
For it is an abomination unto the Lord thy God. All right. So let's get back to the main text.
Ecclesiasticus 19 and 24.
Give me James 4 and 17. Come on.
He that hath small understanding and feareth God is better than one that hath much wisdom and transgresseth the law of the Most High.
See, so the Lord judges you based off of what you already know. What you know and how you do that which you already know. So here it is, we're going into the feast days, but what about just the daily walk with the Lord? Thou shalt not. Are we doing those properly? Because more and more stuff is going to be added on. Right? Read that again.
Ecclesiasticus 19 and 24.
Uh-huh.
He that hath small understanding and feareth God is better than one that hath much wisdom and transgresseth the law of the Most High.
That's right. That's why the Bible says, be ye not many teachers. Don't be so quick to want to teach this gospel if you're not doing it. Because everything that comes out of this to another person, the Lord is going to judge you by that thing. Because you didn't do it, but you wanted everybody else to do it. Give me James 4 and 17. Read that for me.
James 4 and 17.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good.
See, therefore, to him that knoweth to do good. Come on.
And doeth it not.
And does not do it. You've been taught it. You said you confirmed that you know it. Yeah, uh-huh. You said to the Lord, yes. Amen to this. Con to this. Come on.
To him it is sin.
To him it is sin. When he knows to do it, he knows it's there, but he chooses not to do it himself. Okay, back to the main text.
Ecclesiasticus 19 and 25.
Come on.
There is an exquisite subtlety and the same is unjust.
There's an exquisite subtlety, like the serpent was subtle toward speaking with Eve in the garden. There's an exquisite slickness, right, that the devil can be, or a follower of the devil can do. They can act like they're so wise, right? Come on.
And the same is unjust.
And the same is an unjust subtlety, because what they're doing is they're trying to catch someone up doing something. They're trying to catch someone doing something. They're trying to act like they're harmless, but really they're there to try to catch that person up doing something so they can say, aha, come on.
And there is one that turneth aside to make judgment appear.
And there's one that turneth aside to make judgment appear. They want to make something happen. They want to catch somebody doing something wrong. They're an accuser of the brethren, like their father the devil. That's what they're saying. Come on.
And there is a wise man that justifieth in judgment.
And then on the other side, there's a wise man that's coming with the right heart. He's just coming to spread the gospel to the people, and he's going to judge rightly because he's judging fairly. He's not coming for one specific person to try to catch them up in sin. He's not coming for that. He's coming for whosoever will let them come.
Come.
See that thing? That's the difference. That's the difference. See, the Lord knows the hearts of the righteous and the wicked. He know how they move. He know how they navigate through life. He know how they deal with one another. Read that again.
There's a wicked man that hangeth down his head sadly.
And like I said, there's always this, right? The Lord put everything in motion, right? It goes to the right, but if you try to take it back to the left, it's gonna destroy you. If you try to make the Lord's word look bad, it's gonna make you look bad, Israel. Read that again.
There is a wicked man that hangeth down his head
this,
sadly.
This person, he's coming. He's trying to look humble. So he's trying so hard that he actually is looking sad. Humility doesn't look like that. Humility is seen when you decide you want to take the lower seat. When you decide you want to fast. You don't want to have the dainties today. You want to fast. And while you're on the fast, you're not fasting for strife and debate. You're just fasting because you're thanking the Lord. You're thanking the Lord. You ain't in a competition with another man trying to show you can outfast them. You are showing the Lord that you are his man. That's all you're doing. Read that again.
There is an exquisite... Verse 26, there is a wicked man that hangeth down his head sadly.
Uh-huh.
But inwardly, he is full of deceit.
He's a deceiver. He's a devil. Keep going.
Verse 27.
Uh-huh.
Casting down his countenance.
Casting down his countenance, like Esau, coming crouching. Come on.
And making as if he heard not.
Acting like he didn't hear it, walking softly across the floor. Come on.
Where he is not known.
Where he is not known. Come on.
He will do thee a mischief.
He will do thee a mischief. Come on.
Before thou be aware.
Before thou be aware of it. This is how this person operates. Come on.
And if for want of power he be hindered from sinning.
And if for want of power he be hindered from sinning. Come on.
Yet when he findeth opportunity.
So he wants power. He's trying to get it in a slick way. He's trying to get, what do you call that? Preeminence above that person. Right? He's trying to get preeminence above that person. And so that's what he wants, is a position of power. Right? So read that again, that first verse.
And if for want of power, he be hindered from sinning.
And if he's not going to sin, because if he sins now, it might ruin the chances of him getting preeminence above that person. So he's going to play like he's humble. Come on.
Yet when he findeth opportunity.
Yet it hasn't gone away. It's still in his spirit. Come on.
He will do evil.
He's going to do evil. Going down to 29.
A man may be known by his look.
A man is known by his look. I'm telling you, the Lord got this thing laid out, boy. Come on.
And one that hath understanding by his countenance.
And one that hath understanding by his countenance. You can look at this cat and tell he don't have no understanding. This dude is simple. Go ahead.
When thou meetest him.
When you meetest him. You're going to tell he's simple. What is countenance? Countenance is a person's face or facial expression. When those eyes drop, when he started messing with his face, huh? Stroking his beard, huh? This is what he does. His impenetrable eyes and inscrutable countenance gives little away. Now, this is someone who has a nice countenance. This is an example, right? His impenetrable eyes and inscrutable countenance gives little away. So you can't scrutinize this person's countenance because they have the right countenance. They have a godly countenance. You can't get into him. But someone who has an evil countenance, you can decipher where that man's what type of spirit that man has. Give me and we're gonna see how you can decipher this man. Read on down to verse 30.
Verse 30, a man's attire and excessive laughter.
Now you have to understand that as we get older, we're going to dress how we want to dress. Now we're not going to dress how our parents wanted us to dress and all this. We're going to dress how we want to dress. So this is what it's talking about. Read that again.
A man's attire.
A man's attire. He's dressing how he wants to dress now. He's no longer under his parents' tutelage no more. He's his own man. Come on.
And excessive laughter.
And his excessive laughter. Come on.
And gait.
And gait. Come on.
Show what he is.
Now, let's get some of this. Give me Leviticus 16 and 4 ready. And you give me Proverbs 7 and 10. So let's see what gait means, Israel. Gait means the way a person walks. Pay attention. Because you may be doing this. Pay attention. Means the way a person walks. Abnormal gait or gait abnormality occurs when the body systems that control the way a person walks do not function in the right way. This is not a normal walk. They may be walking like they bad. They bad. They bad. They bad, right? Is that godly? Give me Leviticus 16 and 4. Is that godly if you walking like that? If you walking like you bad? Leviticus 16. I done seen somebody doing that. I ain't gonna say who. Hopefully they know who they are. Leviticus 16 and 4.
Leviticus 16 and 4.
Uh-huh.
He shall put on the holy linen coat.
He shall put on the holy linen coat.
And he shall have the linen breeches upon his flesh.
He shall have the linen breeches upon his flesh. Right? So I want to show you. Read that again for me.
He shall put on the holy linen coat. And he shall have the linen breeches upon his flesh.
So here you see it says he shall put on the linen coat. Right? The holy linen coat. And he shall have the linen breeches upon his flesh, and he and shall be girded with a linen girdle, and with the linen mitre shall he be attired. These are holy garments. Therefore shall he wash his flesh in water, and so put them on. So this is describing that these are holy garments, right? Okay, give me Proverbs 7 and 10.
Proverbs 7 and 10.
And then give me Jeremiah. Well, I tell you, don't be right up on that thing. All right? Give me Jeremiah 2 and 32. Be just like I am. Just like I am. I'm not all... right here is good. Come on.
Proverbs 7 and 10.
A little bit closer. A little bit closer. Come on.
And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot.
There met him a woman with the attire of a harlot. Okay? So there is attire that shows that a woman is a harlot. The Bible says that there's an attire that shows that a woman is a harlot.
Con.
Now, she may not be going out selling her body, but in her mind, she has a harlot's mind. So therefore, she's going to dress like a harlot. So that means that there's a way that a godly woman is supposed to dress.
Gone.
There's a way that a godly woman is supposed to dress. Give me Jeremiah 2:32. And then give me Ezekiel 23:15. And remember, sometimes things don't come out immediately. They come out of a person over time. Come on.
Jeremiah 2:32.
Jeremiah 2:32. Come on.
Can a maid forget her ornaments?
Can a maid forget her ornaments? Come on.
Or a bride her attire?
Or a bride her attire. So this is talking about a marital bride, a bride that's getting married. Is she going to wear anything? Or is she going to wear a bride's dress?
Gone.
You understand what I'm saying? Is she going to wear a harlot's clothing to her wedding? So everyone has an attire that means something. With men, their walk. If they're always smiling, if they're always laughing, it means something. Right? You shouldn't always be smiling. You shouldn't always be laughing. You shouldn't always be doing, you should not do nothing too much. There should be a balance. Too much smiling, you can be a fool too.
Gone.
Come on, read that.
Yet my people have forgotten me days without number.
Read that over again.
Jeremiah 2:32.
Uh-huh.
Can a maid forget her ornaments, or a bride her attire? Yet my people have forgotten me days without number.
Uh-huh. Come on, give me, so you see that a woman, when she's getting married, she wears a certain type of attire, right? Okay, so what I'm basically showing you is that we can be defined by what we wear. We can be defined. That's why you got to know what's going on in the times that you live in. And it's just like a young man wearing skinny jeans. Anybody got any skinny jeans around here?
No.
Okay. So that means you shouldn't be wearing no skinny jeans, because skinny jeans say that you gay, say that you a punk. Give me, what was that you read, Jeremiah?
Yes.
Give me Ezekiel 23:15. No, a man of God. I rephrase that. A man of God shouldn't be wearing no skinny jeans or tights or anything that grabs his legs too much. They should be baggy pants. Nothing too close to him. What you got?
Ezekiel 23:15.
And then give me Judah 12:15.
Girded with girdles upon their loins.
Uh-huh.
Exceeding and dyed attire upon their heads.
Now you see the Levites, they had breeches, they had pants, and they had a skirt on over that, over their private parts. No man should be wearing anything that grabs his crotch or anything that's tight on his legs. You should be able to pull your pants off you maybe an inch or two. That's how baggy your pants should be as a man. That's why you see, even me, I wear my pants baggy. So, okay, read that again.
girded with girdles upon their loins, exceeding in dyed attire upon their heads. All of them princes to look to.
All of them princes to look to. So this is prince's attire. Okay. Give me Judith 12 and 15.
Judith 12 and 15. So she arose and decked herself with her apparel and all her woman's attire. And her maid went and lay soft skins on the ground for her over against Holofernes, which she had received of Bagoas for her daily use, that she might sit and eat upon them.
Okay. All right. So this was a woman of God. Okay. She had out modest attire laid out for her because she's a woman of God. Right. So that's the way all women of God should wear their attire. They should wear it modestly. Something that shows that they're a modest woman and they have respect for themselves and they have respect for their God and their husband. Come on. Israel, we hope that you got some wisdom out of what we brought forth today out of Ecclesiasticus, the 19th chapter. And until next time, we bid you Shalom. Thank you.